Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. This is one of those shows where you wake up in the morning and it's NBA draft day and there's a ton around the Suns and what they may do tonight. And then you start getting phone calls and text messages about 8 a.m. that Frank Kush passed away. And immediately you have to confirm that. No offense to those of you that wanted to help out, but that is something where you have to be right rather than be first. And once it was confirmed, it's a tough day. It's just a tough day. If you're a Sun Devil fan, it's a tough day. If you're a Wildcat fan, it's a tough day. If you're one of those people that's like, good, I mean, get out of here. You don't belong in this space. You're not allowed. If you understood that Frank Kush made the ASU-U of A rivalry what it was, then you're allowed. But if you're one of these people from, you know, that goes to another school and you are gleeful in joy over somebody passing away, then I don't want you here. Frank Kush was a lot of things to me, and I wasn't here during the glory days, but we had some awesome, awesome conversations. We had some awesome times on the air together. We had some great events that we would do up at Camp Tonizona. We had some great events that we would do just sitting over a beer at Cole's Ranch talking about whatever. And just a lot of times through the last 20 plus years. There's a segment that was not the biggest on Frank Kush because of what happened on the field and how the departure went with Fred Miller, Dr. Miller. And I know Fred. He was over in San Diego after that. I had lunch with Fred about 3 years ago. And truth be told, I was trying to arrange to get Frank and Fred together. And that didn't happen, unfortunately. And it wasn't that people were against it. It's just Frank's health had been failing for quite some time. Frank cared about people an awful lot, the Frank Kush that I dealt with. And there are people that would say, yeah, you know, he had this fiery temper and he was this and he was that. And I would see him get fired up. There's times that I put Frank Kush on this show. I remember one time in Pine Top where I put Frank on the show with Todd Graham. And Todd actually turned around and let Frank interview him. And it was just memorable stuff. And we have a picture of that we'll show a little bit later and some stories to it as well that added to it. And I remember Frank in the middle of the interview, I somehow just kind of nudged into him and said, so why don't you explain to Coach Graham here what Tucson's all about? And Frank said, them sons of bitches. And like and Todd about lost his mind. Frank, you can't say that on the air. Why the hell not can I say that on the air? And I'd see Frank at the living room. There was this little group of guys who would get together, Nap Lawrence, Fast Eddie, Frank, Dan Kush, and a few others. And they would sit around the table and they'd BS about what was going on with ASU. And that was over the last several years. Frank stopped showing up at that. Dan would always show up. And when I would run into Frank, you could see that he was starting to slow down and the events that we would MC together became less and less. But his impact, wherever he went, people would stop and want the picture taken with him. And I remember explaining to my kids who Frank Kush was. They would say, who's the older guy that when we see him, everybody wants their picture taken? Well, that's Frank Kush. So there's a lot of people that were chasing to come on the show right now. This is one of those shows where you just don't know who's going to drop in, if anybody's going to drop in. I don't know that because it's pretty raw out there right now in Sun Devil Nation. I not having gone to ASU or having gone to U of A, I don't have a dog in the fight. I've always said that. And so I admired the fact that Frank would have so much passion stirred up on his side towards playing U of A. And that the U of A people would have so much passion stirred up on their side towards Arizona State, and that it made for a very healthy rivalry. Al McCoy did the games, from what I was told, back when Frank first jumped on and came on board. And we'll try to find Al here. And there are guys like Randall McDaniel and Curly Culp and Mike Pagel and J.D. Hill and Mike Haynes and others. That if I don't get them today in this next 45 minutes, I know Jeff Munn is in for me tomorrow, but there'll be plenty of content up on the site. Eric's already put up a story this morning. And so this will be one of those shows where, yeah, I'm going to talk about the NBA draft. And yes, it is very important if you're a Suns fan. And yes, there's a lot of stuff that is out there. But when you lose one of the Mount Rushmores, we like to do that in this industry. We like to do Mount Rushmore of this amount. And I'm not the biggest on that, but I get it. It's a way that you can say these are the five iconic faces. And for those of you that are in your 20s or in your 30s or maybe even into your 40s, this may not resonate with you at all. You're like, okay, somebody passed away. You have to understand that the tradition and the history and the heritage around Arizona State football, the standard was Frank Kush. And what I would say through the years that Sun Devil Stadium was a dump because it was the last 15, 20 years. About time they tried to fix it up. I wasn't saying that in any people are like, you're saying that in disrespect to Coach Kush. No, I'm not. I'm speaking truth. The place is a dump. And finally, they're getting it cleaned up and getting it to where it needs to be. Back in the day, it was terrific. It was one of those places where you would go to the stadium and it would be a place that you needed to be at. I mentioned earlier, Al McCoy, voice of the Suns, was also the voice of Arizona State football when Frank Kush was the coach. Coach Kush passing away earlier today. Al McCoy joins us for a couple of moments. Your initial thoughts, Al, on the news of Frank passing?
Well, obviously, Frank Kush was a special, special person. And you're right, Greg. His first year as head coach, I was the play-by-play voice of ASU football. And it was an experience for both of us because Frank, when you think he was fired up later in his career, you can imagine how he was in his first year as the head coach. But he was special. And he, let's face it, he put Arizona State University football on the map. And in the heyday, 70,000 people every Saturday night to watch the Sun Devils. And Frank Kush certainly was the man. And he will always be recognized as that individual. He loved the game. He loved football. And you know, it's interesting, Brad, as you talk through the years that his former players, obviously they respected him for the tough coach that he was. But later in life, they respected him for helping them become the man that they had become later on. So he influenced a lot of people. He was a friend to all of us, and as I said, he's the one that put Arizona State University football on the map. No question about it.
Al McCoy with us, Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Frank Kush passing away earlier today at the age of 88. Al, I'm curious, in preparation as a broadcaster to go sit with Coach Kush, what was he like away from the field and giving you ideas, guidance, information to get ready for games? Were you out at practices? It was a day where you could be on the field and right behind or in the middle of all the action. What was he like to deal with outside of game day?
Well, he was great. And I used to kid him because particularly in that first year when I was doing the games on radio, I had to warn him a little bit. You know, we'd get ready to do a pregame interview and I'd say, Frank, do you want to touch on this or touch on that? And he might be a little explosive with his comment. I'd say, Frank, maybe we better cool it a little bit. I don't know if you want to say that, you know, because Frank was never one to hold anything back, as you know. But from a broadcaster, he was great. He was great copy. He was a great interview. But as I said, in those early years, sometimes I had to hold him back a little bit, Brad, because he could be a little bit outspoken. But he was never at a loss for words. Mm-hmm. And he had a great rapport with all of the media, radio, TV, newspapers. I think anybody that covered the Sun Devils in that era loved Frank Kush because he was always available. He had comments. He never held back. And as I said, it was such a tremendous era for sports because it was the thing that really put our state and our city and our area on the map. Even though the Devils played night games, they didn't get the recognition in the East for a long time because mm-hmm. of that. But when you have 70,000 people at Sun Devil Stadium every Saturday night and you're winning games as the Coach Kush teams did, you start to get recognition. And when they got to the bowl games, they got that recognition pretty much thanks to Frank Kush.
Well, and Al, obviously everything today is about Frank Kush passing away, but I'd be remiss in not asking you about tonight as voice of the Suns with the fourth overall pick. And I know this is a delicate transition, but it is the news event tonight. What do you think is going to happen? There's a lot blowing around out there as we, you and I sit here right now at 10:17 a.m. The Suns may trade the pick. There's just a lot out there. What do you think is going to happen tonight?
Well, it's a big day, and I don't know what's going to happen. I always remember, when I think of my longtime friend, cohort, co-broadcaster, the late Cotton Fitzsimmons, and Cotton used to say, you know, the only people doing great this time of the year are the phone companies. Every general manager's on the telephone trying to make deals, and that's about it. They're just phone conversations, and that's all it is conversation. The Suns have the number 4 pick. I think they're in a great position. They have a great opportunity to add another really strong young player to this young group of Suns. If a trade comes up, well, who knows? That's what we'll find out. I know we're expecting really a huge crowd at the arena. Things get underway about 4 o'clock. We're going to be unveiling a new 50th anniversary logo because next year's the golden year for the Suns.
Yep.
I tell the story, Brad, that Frank Cush and ASU had it for 10 straight years from 1958 to 68. Then the Suns came in as the first pro team in the Valley to share that recognition that ASU had built up with their great fans. So, great day for the Suns.
All right, Al. As always, appreciate it. Appreciate the time with the Hall of Fame voice, Al McCoy.
My pleasure, Brad.
On the other side, Chris Broussard with us, Fox Sports 1 NBA Insider. We're going to switch gears delicately on a day where the death of Frank Cush, obviously the main story. We'll get into the Suns a little bit and then back to more on the passing of Frank Cush. I'm Brad Sussmat. So tonight is the NBA draft. Suns have the 4th overall pick as we sit here right now. If you're just joining us, the big story of the day here locally, the draft is tonight, but Frank Cush passed away this morning. The legendary Hall of Fame coach passing away at the age of 88. And so there will be tributes. There will be plenty of people that will be joining us, whether it be today, tomorrow, be on the website. We'll have plenty of people up on the site to talk about Coach Cush and him passing away at the age of 88. In about 10 minutes, we'll have Nap Lawrence with us. We just had Al McCoy. Nap Lawrence, one of the most influential, well-known boosters at Arizona State and a close personal friend of Frank Cush. He'll be with us. And obviously, a day like today, you think of Dan Cush and the family, and thoughts and prayers obviously go out to the family on this bit of news, big news, that the iconic Frank Cush passing away today at the age of 88. With that said, we'll seamlessly transition over to the Suns. Suns pick tonight, 4th. The 4th overall pick in the draft. And what are they going to do at number 4 as we sit here right now? Is it Porzingis coming to Phoenix? Is it the Kevin Love deal? Is it every day there's been something. DeAndre Jordan the last couple of days. I know Suns fans have just been up in arms on that one. You don't want to part with Devin Booker. To give us inside context and what he thinks may happen here in Phoenix is Chris Broussard, great name, and FS1 NBA Insider, to talk about the Suns' 4th pick. Of course, Chris, very much a part of FS1 on Speak for Yourself, The Herd, and Undisputed. He joins us live here on Sports 360 AZ with Brad Sussmat. Chris, as you sit here right now, what is going to happen in Phoenix at number 4 from your view and what you're hearing?
Wow, well, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, they could be, you know, I think Boston could be a team that does a lot as well, but Phoenix is right up there. I mean, they could be among the most active. They could be a team that really shakes everything up tonight. And then again, they could just keep the 4th pick, you know? So we'll see how it goes, but I think they have some great options out there. You know, as you mentioned, they're in the talks about Kristaps Porzingis, Kevin Love. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge, obviously they've been contacted about him. If I'm Phoenix, I would rather have – some people might think this is crazy. I'd rather have Love than Aldridge, and I certainly would rather have Porzingis than Aldridge. Mm. I would give up the 4th pick for Porzingis, assuming I can, you know, talk to him and his people and make sure he's going to stay. But long term, you know. But Porzingis is a great player. You might be able to get him for the 4th pick. Might have to give up another young player. But, you know, they got a lot of great options. And it's time for them to start winning.
Yep.
And that's the thing. Enough of the rebuild. What's it been, 7 years now they've been out of the playoffs? You do have some nice young pieces. I'll be interested, too. You know, another name you haven't heard a lot as far as the draft, but Eric Bledsoe. You know, are they going to move on from him? You know, obviously they sat him out toward the end of the year. A lot of people felt that was because they were going to look to trade him. Didn't want to make sure he doesn't get hurt. But I like Bledsoe. I like a Bledsoe-Booker backcourt, assuming Bledsoe stays healthy. You got some nice young pieces on the front court. You got some options there on the trade market. So potentially things could be looking up for the Suns because they need it. It's been a bad stretch here.
We're talking with Chris Broussard, FS1, NBA Insider. Yeah, the last playoff game here in Phoenix, not that I've been counting, was May 29th, 2010, Chris. So it's just been awful over here. And we're sitting here talking about rebuilding and acquiring assets for Ryan McDonough the last 3 years. That's been the narrative over here. We keep acquiring it. That's what he keeps saying. And they've got two number ones from Miami next year. I guess the thing on Porzingis, let's just parse that one back. Parting with the number one, the fourth pick overall for Porzingis makes a lot of sense. Parting with the fourth pick overall for Kevin Love, to me, or LaMarcus Aldridge at this point, seems to be too steep of a price tag. Would you agree on that, disagree on that?
Well, I would agree with Aldridge. First of all, he's only got 1 year left on his deal. You wouldn't even be sure if he would stay.
Right.
He's also shown that when he's the man, you know, he struggled with that role in San Antonio. So I wouldn't do it for Aldridge. Love, you know, I think Kevin Love would be a great fit in Phoenix. And I think he'd stay. You know, it's a warm weather city. It's a great destination. I think he would go there and give you 23 points, 12 rebounds a game. He's a veteran. You could sell him as a champion. You bring up a good point. I mean, the fourth pick for that is tough.
Yep.
But my point, at some point you got to start winning or trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's not old. He's only 28. You know, so he's got a lot of game left in him. I kind of like Love there. You know, is Josh Jackson or whoever they get at number four going to be as good as Kevin Love? You know, I'm not so sure. You know, and I don't think Love is a number one. He's clearly not a number one guy on a championship team. But I think Devin Booker eventually emerges as your number one guy if he isn't, you know, if he isn't next year if Love is there. And again, I don't know if Bledsoe would still be there. But, you know, that's not a big three, but it's a good trio. It's a trio that can give you hope. And it's a trio that can give you a little bit of a chance to win now. So, you know, you guys are kind of what you said earlier. You know, everybody wants to tear it down and pick up assets and rebuild that way. For most teams, that doesn't work. You know, you guys have been doing it, as you said, now for 7 years. And it's getting old. You know, Orlando's in that situation. It's getting old. You know, it's worked out for Philadelphia if they stay healthy. You know, it worked for Oklahoma City. But those, you know, it doesn't work for teams all the time. The L.A. Clippers spent two decades doing that, you know. And so I think there's a lot to be considered. You might want to get more than just Love if you give up that number four pick. But, you know, that's something I really look strongly at if I'm the Phoenix Suns.
Before I let you go, Chris Broussard with us, FS1. Of course, he works on the studio shows of Speak for Yourself, The Herd, and The Undisputed. Does a great job, NBA analyst, insider, with Brad Sussmat. If you were to look at Porzingis just on face value, Chris, so much has been written about how great he can be. I look at it as he's already great at 16-7 for a bad team in New York City. If the Suns were able to get him for four, and let's say Marquese Chris coming out, you're sitting here now with a big two in Booker and Porzingis. You got to find that third one. Maybe it is Bledsoe, although the two knee surgeries concern me. Is it enough to at least become a playoff team a year from now and then challenge the Warriors in 2 or 3 years? Because that's not going to challenge Golden State, let's be honest. I guess the question is how good is Porzingis from your view at 21?
I really like Porzingis, and you're right. I mean, he comes right off the bat, gives you 16 points and 7 rebounds in a bad situation. I think he could do more than that. And first of all, they're running the antiquated triangle offense, okay? Secondly, they want him in the post. He's a perimeter player. You can put Dirk Nowitzki in the post. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll add that later as he gets bigger and stronger, but he is a perimeter player. Kevin Durant is just as tall almost, and you don't put him in the post. You know, that's not going to be his bread and butter. It's going to be on the perimeter because he's such a good shooter, ball handler, and things like that. So I feel like he's excelled in a bad situation.
Yep. Yep.
You know, Derrick Rose and Carmelo Anthony, he was a third option. You know, Derrick Rose is not that type of point guard that was going to focus on getting the ball to Porzingis. So, you know, a lot of times Porzingis was a third option in that situation. So I really like him a lot. I think he can be like a Dirk Nowitzki-type player, that caliber. So I love him. I would definitely give up the fourth pick for him. Now, does that get you in the playoffs next year? I mean, the West is deep.
Yep.
It's not quite what it was a few years ago, but it's still very tough. I certainly don't think it has you competing with Golden State.
No.
Years.
Right.
You know, you're going, but you could be a playoff team in 2 years. You know, you still would have some pieces to put around them and help these guys grow and mature. But that's, you know, those are the building blocks. And to have Devin Booker and Kristaps Porzingis, those are some very good building blocks. There are very few teams that will have a young duo better than that. Minnesota, I really love with Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins. But outside of that, you know, and we'll see what Lonzo Ball becomes with the Lakers and Brandon Ingram. But you will be right there, you know, Philadelphia obviously as well. But you will be right there with one of the great young duos in the league.
Good stuff. Appreciate your time and appreciate your work, Chris. Good job there at FS1. Thanks.
Yep, no problem.
There's Chris Broussard there over at FS1, NBA Insider. Good stuff. The latest on the trade, the NBA draft being tonight. Right, on the other side, we're going to shift back to the passing of Frank Kush. Nap Lawrence is going to be with us next. Nap is, those of you in the Sun Devil world, you know Nap as long, long time booster, big booster, and a very close friend of Frank Kush. I talked with Nap about 30 minutes ago, and he said he'd be glad to come on and talk about the passing of an icon and legend. There's a few other names we're chasing as well. Goody at the movies in about 15 minutes. I'm Brad Sismad. Welcome back. Obviously, tonight we have the NBA draft with the Suns picking fourth overall. A lot of buzz about that. Thanks again to Chris Broussard at FS1. But the bigger story today, the overarching story across the state, is Frank Kush passing away at the age of 88. We heard from Al McCoy earlier, the original voice of the Sun Devils in the Kush era. We have a picture of Frank and myself and Todd Graham. This is up in Pine Top. Every year we would do the White Mountain Steak Fry. And I love this picture because Frank is interviewing Todd Graham. This was Todd's first year at ASU. And I asked Frank to come on, and I took the headset off and said, Frank, you do the interview. So Frank started explaining to Todd how you better beat U of A. And I asked Frank about, you know, his thoughts on the U of A. And on the air, Frank said, you know, them sons of bitches, I wanted to kick their ass. And Todd just was like, Frank, and tried to take his mic away. It was pretty funny. It's just how it was with Frank. He always spoke from the heart and spoke truth. Nap Lawrence joins us next. The next voice you hear is one of the most influential boosters at Arizona State in the Kush era. And a Sun Devil through and through, but an Arizona guy, I would say, through and through about the great state. And also a very close personal friend, Frank Kush. I spoke to Nap about a half hour ago, and he said he'd love to come on and talk about his close friend and his passing. Nap, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
When you heard the news, Nap, of Frank passing away, what were your thoughts?
My thought is we lost a legend, one of the founders of the state of Arizona athletically. He's right up there on top of the mountain with Jerry Colangelo, Bobby Winkles, and Lute Olson. Probably gave Arizona State as much recognition as any other person this side of Michael Crow.
When he first came to Arizona State, what were your initial dealings like with him, Nap?
Well, I was a freshman, just graduated from Eloy High School. Went to Arizona State because it was halfway between Phoenix and Tucson. And the year before, Dan Devine, with Frank Kush helping him, beat the U of A 57-0. And my whole life was dedicated to being a football fan. And so immediately I said, I'm going to Arizona State, and I'm going to be part of that program. Well, the only thing I could do as a young freshman was go into ROTC and ask for the duty of raising the flag at football games. So I got to sit on the field and got to know Frank from the very beginning. He was a larger-than-life man that commanded as much respect as any five-star general ever. And we had a good run for his entire life. I was there when everything that happened good to Frank and everything that happened bad. But I can tell you this, that behind that mountain of a man was a very compassionate, loyal, loving person. He was a great parent. He was a great spouse. And he was about as good of a football coach, especially for the disadvantaged kids that needed a father figure. He was absolutely wonderful, and that's why he's revered as much as any human I've ever seen. I don't think I can go to an event that he attends where he doesn't get a larger ovation than the person being honored at the banquet.
No, that's true. I've emceed a lot of those, and there's no question that if you don't even acknowledge Frank, you're going to have people that will come up to you saying, you have to acknowledge that Frank is here. And Frank would tell me, don't let anybody know that I'm here. And I would have to explain to Frank, they all know you're here. they all want to see you, Frank. So, and he'd be mad at me. You don't have to say anything about me being here. I'm in the back corner. No, you're not. They all know where your table is. So he was great in that way. I'm curious, Knapp, you mentioned that as a freshman, so you would raise the flag, and did he warm up to you immediately? Was there a level of intimidation from you to him? Like, I'm scared to death of this man, and how did you two become so close?
Well, it was practically friendship at first sight. It only took him like 12 years before he knew my name. But they were 12 good years, and it was fun watching him operate and watching him. He's the best offensive line coach I ever saw. He was hands-on with the offensive line, but he also was tremendous at delegating to young, sharp people and letting them. For example, Don Baker, his offensive coordinator, for Larry, his defensive coordinator, they run their show. He didn't interfere. And the thing about it is he realized that recruiting is what it's all about. Nobody's a good coach if they have lousy athletes to coach. And Frank was always good at that. And had he stayed at Arizona State and had Fred Miller stayed at Arizona State, we probably would have had 5 national football titles by now and had a total athletic program analogous to Oregon. Those were the 2 greatest, and they were both very good friends. And during the only really difficult time of Frank's life, he was divided. When attorneys get involved in situations, nothing good happens. But anyway, that's another subject. And both of those were dear friends of mine, and I know they both admired each other tremendously, regardless of anything you hear. They were the legend for Arizona State that built our program.
To follow up on that, I had lunch with Fred Miller 3 years ago at the Tilted Kilt, and I said to Fred at the time, and he had just had some skin cancer surgery, and I said to him, I'd like to get you and Frank together because Frank's health is not well, and I think the two of you should speak about it. And he was wide open to that and said, absolutely, Brad, let's arrange that. Fred mentored me in San Diego when he went to San Diego State and gave me my break in broadcast, one of them. And I was always disappointed, Knapp, that I was not able to get Frank and Fred together to clear the record. And when the Kevin Rutledge incident happened, that it really divided the community towards Frank. I wasn't here, but that was my understanding. Can you lend some insight as to that dark time with Frank at ASU?
Yes, and I don't want to get into that because everybody involved is still a dear friend of mine. And I think had those two just stayed in the office and batted each other around for a few minutes, a lot of it would have been accomplished for both of their careers. They would be legendary national champions. However, it didn't occur that way, but I was able to get Danny Cush into a meeting with Fred Miller, and everything was lovey-dovey. I could tell the mutual respect for each other and their family was evident. So I think it ended well.
That's good to hear. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time today, Knapp, on short notice and lending some insight on Frank Cush. Thanks.
You bet, Brad. Thank you for paying attention to a very important man. Thank you.
You got it, Knapp. There's Knapp Lawrence. Okay, so one of the longtime, very influential booster at Arizona State and a very loyal Sun Devil. So appreciate his time. There's other people that this news is just breaking that may drop in on the show before we wrap things up today. And I know Jeff Munn is in for me tomorrow. On the other side, though, we shift gears. We'll have Goody at the Movies, a few other things on my mind. That's next. Stay with us. Right, so we're going to have Goody at the Movies here in a couple of minutes. And as mentioned, this is one of those days where the show just kind of goes different directions with the ability to go chase some guests and have some voices come on that I think would be very appropriate on a day where Frank Cush passed away this morning at the age of 88. When I got the news that Frank Cush passed away this morning, I immediately thought of Danny White and Mike Haynes and Curly Culp and J.D. Hill and Mike Pagel, a lot of names that I know that Sun Devil fans, and I'm sure I'm leaving out many. And if those of you that are watching are saying, what about me or what about this guy? I'm on the fly today, okay? Just roll with me on this. Trying to put context into the passing of Frank Cush is really, really difficult. You can't put it into words. And every year that I would go to Pine Top and Frank would come by and he'd want to know how things were, we'd see each other at the athletic facility. And I didn't play for Frank Cush like the next voice that you heard, that you're about to hear, which is Danny White. And I was overcome with emotion when I would see Frank and just talk with him about some things. And now Danny White joins us live for a few minutes on a very tough day, the passing of the legendary coach Cush. Are you in Sholo up the ranch?
Yeah, Brad, I'm just heading through Sholo on my way home, unfortunately. I wish I could stay up here a little longer, but coming back to the heat.
Yeah. You've heard the news, I'm sure, by now on Coach Cush passing away, and I'm just curious, Danny, your thoughts.
Well, my thoughts are it's a great day, Brad. It's not a sad day at all. We hadn't really been able to communicate with him for months and months, and his lifestyle had deteriorated to the point that, it was not even a lifestyle. And so I'm happy for him. I think it's a day that we can all remember what a great impact he had. I've been on the phone with Steve Matlock and some of the other guys this morning, and what a great impact he had on us. And the funny thing about it, Brad, is that at the time we all hated him. If you could have tied him up, and we would have all come by and just punched him right in the face if we could have. And yet, with maturity and age and time and perspective, you realize, and me probably more than any other that he ever coached, because I was a baseball player, and to this day I would still be trying to hit a curveball if it wasn't for him. And it convinced me, number one, gave me the opportunity, number two, and toughened me mentally to the point that I actually believed I could play football. And it's all because of him. I mean, other than my father, there isn't anybody that had more of an impact on my life than Frank Cush did.
What did he see in you that would make him stick his foot so far up your backside, do you think, Danny?
I don't know, Brad. He signed me because I know I've heard him say several times, I was a good athlete. I played baseball, I ran track, I played basketball, and he liked the fact that I was a good athlete. In fact, I went there as a punter and a defensive back. And, a lot of really strange things happened after my freshman year, and he was kind of stuck with me as a quarterback. I only played 1 year of high school football as a quarterback, and so he didn't bring me there to play quarterback. But, Grady Hurst quit, Joe Spagnuolo graduated, a bunch of guys transferred, and he was kind of stuck with me. And I think he gradually began to gain some confidence in it wasn't my physical ability, it was maybe my mental ability that maybe I could play. And we had such a good team that it bought me some time. And as time went on, we got better and better and better. So I don't think it was anything he saw in me other than just the fact that I was a pretty good athlete in high school.
Last question. If you were to talk about the iconic figures in our state, everybody today is trying to make sense of it and say that it's Jerry Colangelo and Frank Cush and Lute Olson in some particular order. Where would you put Frank in all this conversation around our great state, Danny?
Well, you know, if you go to U of A, you put him way, way down on the bottom of the list. But if you go to ASU, you know, he'd be right at the top. And he's certainly at the top of my list. So I guess it depends on who you are and who you played for. But anybody who played football for Frank Cush would have him at the top of their list.
Last question. When you played the U of A, what was Frank Cush like? Game week, game day, halftime. Just what was he like when it was U of A time?
Well, he was no different. He tried to shut me up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, my hatred for U of A was genetic. It didn't have anything to do with Frank Cush. It was in my blood. It came from my dad. And so I didn't like U of A from day one. And sometimes I would say things publicly, and especially after my senior year, I made some comments, and he came up to me after banquet and in all seriousness said, "I don't appreciate you talking about the U of A like that because you don't have to play them again." and he did. But you know what? It didn't matter, Brad, if it was a U of A or a UTEP or Colorado State, or it didn't matter. He never changed. And every game was, you know, like it was the Rose Bowl to him. And when we lost, and we didn't lose very often, but when we did, it was not fun around there.
Yeah. I'll let you go off that. Drive safe, and we'll catch up soon.
Okay.
I know we need to catch up, and we will. Thank you.
Okay, Brad. Thanks.
There's Danny White with us. Frank Cush passing away today at the age of 88. We'll have Goody at the Movies. We'll take a short time out here just to reset. A short time out. We'll have Goody at the Movies on the other side. Thanks for being with us. Ever since I saw Bill's review of Transformers yesterday, I've been just looking forward to this with eager anticipation, because it's very seldom that we bring Bill Goodykuntz on the show to review movies, chief film critic for Gannett and AZ Central, that he just absolutely destroys a movie as much as he destroyed Transformers, which I know some of you just can't get over yourselves that it's Transformers. You're going to stay in line for hours and be the first ones in and go tell all your friends and all that stuff. Bill hates this movie, and I'm speaking for him here. I'm not even going to let Bill. I can do the review myself, but I'd rather have Bill just crush it. Have you ever hated a movie more than Transformers, Bill?
Sure. And by the way, this is going better than I thought it was. I thought what you were going to say was usually we've never had Bill on this show when we've actually read the review. But we.
Wow.
I mean, this is horrible. I mean, I don't want to sugarcoat. This is a terrible movie, and it's stupid beyond belief.
Wow.
I don't know how to defend it. It's because the story is impossible to follow. I mean, it's just it is incoherent, and it's loud, and it's so long. Although it's not as long as the last one, but
what do you say in long? 2.5? I haven't seen the runtime yet.
240. At first it was 248, but then they somehow chopped 20 minutes out of it, so it's down to 228 now.
So let me ask you, from a comparison standpoint, was Pirates worse than Transformers? Or
no.
Was Transformers worse than Pirates?
Transformers, I've got to believe. Transformers, it's tempting to say it's the worst movie of the year so far, but it's sort
wow.
of expected. Like, I really didn't like... and I don't. By the way, I went into it hoping to be great. I mean, I didn't go into it with, you know, knives drawn or anything. I hope they're all good. But this was terrible. And, I mean, in some ways, the Snatch, the Amy Schumer movie, was was probably worse just because she could do so much better, you know. This is, you know, I read a really interesting review of it in The New Yorker, but it's a really brilliant guy named Richard Brody. He's one of these guys, like, he's sort of like a physicist or something. I mean, he's smarter than everybody else. But he wrote about how it's so bad. But Michael Bay, the director, has such inventive visual ideas that it's almost like he's created this new kind of experimental film that only works with images and sensation. It doesn't use a story. And I thought, well, that's one way to say that the effects are sometimes sort of cool, but the story's horrible. But you know what's weird is I wrote this review, and I don't, you know, the great Robert Bianco, who is USA Today's TV critic. When I used to be a TV critic and I was just starting, he told me one time, and I think this is great advice. He said people love to write negative reviews because they get to trash everything. And he said, but you really got to be careful because you don't want to show off. It's really easy to make it more about you and how funny and clever you can be, you know, and how mean you can be, when what it's really, what, you know, good or bad, what you're really supposed to be doing is, you know, saying how the movie is. Now, that was really good advice. And I don't usually just tear something apart. And I think I was fair in this, but it was terrible. But the thing that was weird was, you know, I'm sitting there in this movie, and there are recognizable things that happen. I mean, there's every once in a blue moon, it's like, oh, wow, the good guy actually did something that we're supposed to recognize as good, you know. And I'm not overstating it when I say that it's hard to pick those out, that it's so incoherent. But every now and then something happens, it's like, oh, this is, you know, I should be happy about this. And people actually cheered and stuff in the movie theater.
Really?
And I think, like what you said when you were talking me in there, was that there are some people that love these movies. And, I guess maybe they grew up watching the TV show or something. I can't. To me, it's unfathomable. I think the whole things have been stupid. I wrote, the great late Roger Ebert wrote one time about the first one, I think it was the first one, that you can save yourself a whole lot of money by just sitting in your kitchen floor and getting the big old pot out of the cupboard down there and hitting yourself in the head with a spoon with it. it's basically the same sensation. you can save yourself $13 or whatever.
That's really. Let's move on then from Transformers to the Bad Batch. The Bad Batch. Tell me about The Bad Batch.
I was really disappointed in this movie. The what you should do is, instead of seeing The Bad Batch, it's Anna Lilian Amanpour. She's a really good filmmaker. Her first movie was a movie called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. And it was this sort of post-punk Iranian black and white vampire movie, which is every bit as weird as that sounds, but really cool. And I mean, really inventive, really different. And so now this time she's got like a bigger budget and she's working in color, you know, and all that stuff. And it's about this, it's sort of near future, like everything else now. It's this near future dystopian world. And this girl gets dropped off in this behind this fence. And beyond the fence, it says, you know, this is no longer the purview of the U.S. government. Good luck, or something like that. So this movie involves bodybuilding cannibals. And then Keanu Reeves as somebody called the Dream, who is protected by machine gun wielding pregnant women who wear T-shirts that say "The Dream is inside me," and it's really visually, it's really cool, it's really inventive. But again, I mean, maybe it's a theme this week. The story just doesn't make any sense, though. And that's too bad because although I went into Transformers with an open mind, I was not surprised that it wasn't that good. I was surprised that this wasn't better.
Well, there's one name in all this. Keanu Reeves is in very, very few things that are any good anymore. So I just...
but John Wick, come on.
Very few things.
I've always loved Keanu Reeves, and I'll tell you why very quickly. Whenever I talk to these people, I talk to Keanu Reeves, who it's probably no great surprise is a lot smarter than, you know, you'd think in these movies and stuff. But when I always try to ask them a question at the beginning to kind of put them at ease or see what they're going to be like. Like I used to say, you know, thank you for doing this. I'm sure they got better things to do than talk to reporters all day. And like Gus Van Zandt, a filmmaker who I've always loved, was so disappointing. He was like, well, it's part of the publicity. And I was like, yeah, I know what it is. I'm just trying to talk to you. But when my kids were little, I used to say this thing all the time where I would say, before we're done, you may hear the screams of a 4-year-old girl, but, you know, don't worry. everything's under control. And however they reacted to that, you know, you could usually kind of tell if they're going to be fun or not. And I said that, then Keanu Reeves said, "Outstanding." And then I was just like, I thought this is going to be a great interview, and it was.
He's Neo, and that's it to me. I mean, John Wick, yes, you're right. But Neo, that's Matrix, and that's about as good as I'm going to get with Keanu Reeves. That's just me.
Yeah, it's pretty good, though.
No, it's pretty good. All right, you've got one more movie here on the list, The Exception.
The Exception is pretty cool. It's really weird. Not, you know, Nazis are not typically your romantic heroes in the movie, but Jack Courtney, who you'll see in a lot of movies kind of as a bad guy, he is a Nazi in this, but he's sort of a soulful, sensitive Nazi, and he's haunted by like this massacre in Poland that he was involved in and where he was injured. And he ends up being that after World War One, they exiled the Kaiser to Norway or somewhere. And he's like, and they say, now you're over your wounds. You got to go be the head of his security detail because we got to keep him alive because people think, you know, maybe he has some sentimental value to Germany or something. But what he's really supposed to do is spy on him and see if he says anything bad about Hitler. Mm. And he ends up sort of falling for the maid, who the maid ends up being not who you think she is. She's somebody different. And she's also Cinderella, by the way. Mm. They end up, the first time he sees her, she says, "Take off your clothes." And she takes off her clothes. And you think, oh, well, this is how it's going to be. But then the next time they see each other, she says to him, "Take off your clothes." And he does. So it's, you know, there's sort of some equal footing there, and you get the idea that, but there's a little more to her than you think, and there is. And the Kaiser is played by Christopher Plummer, who is just great these days. I mean, he's really embraced this thing of like playing these old guys, and the Kaiser was, again, this is why this is kind of a difficult movie. Even in the movie, he's like a real anti-Semite, and he's, you know, mean old guy and everything, but he makes him kind of charming. And it's if you like these kind of movies, it's fictionalized, but it's based some in fact. And if you like World War II movies and stuff, it's different. It's not bad. It's kind of the best of a weak bunch.
Okay, so you wrote on your social media this week. Not that I am trolling on you or watching you closely, but that next week is really good.
Next week is good.
All right, and you can't give away anything, or can you?
I can tell you that among the movies next week are. The movie called Baby Driver, which is the movie that probably, aside from Dunkirk, the movie that more people have asked me about than any other. And also a movie called The Big Sick, which has gotten a lot of buzz, and which has the person who will always be, and I will tell you this next week, the reason why, who's always been one of my favorite actresses, Zoe Kazan, who is Elia Kazan's granddaughter, the famous director. And she's a writer, and she's an actress, and there's a very specific reason why I will always, I've talked to her for this movie. I've always really liked her, and I'll tell you why. This is a good tease, I hope.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time, and thanks for rolling with me today a little late with the Kush passing, but thanks.
Thank you.
There's Bill Goodykins, Goody at the Movies. Appreciate Billy's time, as always. That is our show for today. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Edwin Rodriguez, the assistant chairman of the board. It takes two people to direct this ship right into the rocks or navigate the curves as we do every day. And today was navigating curves, which was fun. Eric Sorensen, great job as always, the senior executive vice president of everything or nothing, depending on the day. Jordan Hamm and Haley Stasiak helping out as well. Thanks to our sponsors. Without them, we're not here. We're completely self-funded. No investors, just me saying, let's go do this. So support our sponsors, and we appreciate them being with us, and I appreciate you checking us out day in and day out. Enjoy your day.